American Log Homes and Cabins is assisting a developer in liquidating several of our kits that have deposits on them for only the balance owed. Most of these will save you more than half of the original cost. An example, our Augusta model, normally $42,450, is being sold for $16,500. Our Biloxi model, normally $36,825, is being sold for $14,500. This includes delivery, excluding California, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, Idaho, Alaska, and Hawaii, but we will pay partial shipping to those states. These kits have not been manufactured, and there's no time limit on delivery. This is a log home kit that includes complete blueprints from foundation details to roof, stack sheets, and a construction manual. Any do-it-yourselfer or builder can erect the logs. Kits do not include any part of roof, windows, or doors. Please call 704-602-3035 for availability. You can also visit our website at www.AmericanLogHomesAndCabins.com.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Patricia Wiltshire isn't a detective or a pathologist, but she has worked in more than 300 particularly grisly cases throughout the United Kingdom. She's a botanist, and since she was first called on for help by a police force in the 1990s, she's developed a range of techniques that has helped the police secure convictions of rapists and murderers, including Ian Huntley. She's now 82, but she's still working. Afternoon, Patricia.
Good afternoon.
I know it's probably difficult to generalise, but would you normally be called out to a crime scene?
Well, it depends on the crime. I only ever really get involved in very serious crimes and ones where the police think that either I might be able to give them a timeline or to collect samples that might for the future be useful to link any offender or suspect that they might apprehend with that place. So I wouldn't get called out for every crime scene, no. I mean, it is very specialised, so it's usually murders, rapes, serious abductions, that sort of thing.
Mm. And are there, and I suppose it depends on the place they're trying to link the crime to. Would you be looking for specific things?
Well, if it's out of doors, if it's anywhere out of a building, and sometimes even in a building, it really doesn't matter because everywhere is unique and everywhere has trace evidence.
What kinds of things?
Well, anything microscopic, really. So that I work mostly on pollen, plant spores, fungal spores. But when you do a preparation, if I take a scrape of the surface of the ground I have to process it chemically and so on, there are a lot of things with very robust polymers in their outer walls or in their structure, and they resist all the acids and alkalis that they're subjected to, and they will turn up as well. So one can get little bits of insect and little crystals and all sorts of things that can actually help.
And can you find those things inside vehicles, inside
and
inside bodies?
Yes. I mean, we've all got pollen inside our guts because you eat food. And most of the food we eat actually is plant food. So that if you drink wine or you eat bread or cake, for example, you might have grape pollen in because obviously a grape pollen can get into the wine. It could get into cake with the sultanas and with the currants and so on, because they are grapes, and bread, because there's cereals have pollen, and you get cereal pollen in your food. And in fact, if you eat cabbage or if you eat broccoli, or your gut will be full of broccoli pollen, because that's what broccoli is. It's a great big flower head.
Mm. And I assume we'd inhale pollen as well.
Yes, we do. We do inhale pollen, but our lungs do a very, very good job of trapping it so it doesn't get lodged down in your lungs. And also your noses. You have special bones between your nostrils and your skull, if you like, and they're called turbinate bones, and they're covered with membranes. and they're sticky and they have little hairs on them and they're constantly beating. So anything you breathe in, if it's a foreign substance, it'll be trying to beat it out of your nose. And that's when you sneeze, and you sneeze it out as well. Sneezes are really very important, of course, because it's getting your membranes free of particles.
And so then how would you extract those little particles? Do you have to take part in the autopsy as well?
Oh, yes, yes. I've developed a technique. If it's from the nasal passages, I mean, I've evolved that method to quite an advanced level now. I would work with the pathologist, and it sounds pretty gruesome, but in a post-mortem, a brain always has to be removed for examination. And then I would go into the skull and go through some little bones that are just above your nasal passages. It's called the cribriform plate. It's got little holes in it to let your olfactory nerves through. So it's quite fragile. And I just break it open, and then I can flush down and clear the turbinates of their particulates. And, of course, having to clear the face as well.
My word. And you developed all these techniques as you went along, rather than you particularly had formal training in
there. Oh, I didn't have, no, I had to invent things, yes. I mean, nearly everything I do I've had to invent. And the techniques have been tested time and time and time again, and they do work. And they're all run to quite strict scientific principles. I mean, I'm not like a cowboy, you know, it's all done very, very carefully. But yes, I mean, I've had to invent things as I've gone along, really.
Yeah. What was your very first case that you remember?
The very first case was in Hertfordshire, way back. It's either 1993 or 1994. I can't remember. And I was working in archaeology at the time as a botanist. But there had been a triad killing of a man. And these people had captured him and killed him because he'd been defrauding them. And they killed him by accident, actually. They didn't really mean to kill him, but they didn't quite know what to do with the body. And so they thought, oh, we'll go to Wales. But they couldn't find Wales. And they ended up going up the A10 in Hertfordshire, and they saw a field, and they didn't realise where they were. And they put him in a ditch, and they thought, oh, we'll try and get rid of the body. So they tried to burn it. Well, of course, you can't just burn a body. They're very, very difficult things to get rid of by burning. Partly because they're so wet. I mean, your body is full of water. And if they just left the body, it might have rotted down and gone down into the soil. But they tried to burn it. And, of course, the farmer saw the smoke the next day and found the body. And the police had a car, and they knew the car had been into the field, but they couldn't prove it. So they asked me if I would see if there was any trace evidence of that field in the car. And it's a very long story, and it was very long and drawn out, and I had to invent all sorts of things. I didn't really know what I was doing, but I actually got profiles from this car that I recognised, and I recognised the edge of an arable field with an ancient hedge. And I described that to the police, and they said, oh, well, that's the sort of place the body was put. And I went with them to the crime scene, and I said, well, I'd like to test myself. And I walked along the field, and lo and behold, I picked out the very place in this big field. It was along a hedgerow. I picked out the very place in the ditch where the body had been put. And that really shook me rigid, because I didn't realise that pollen studies could be so specific.
My word. You were also involved in investigating the murders of Holly Wells and Jessica Chapman. Yes,
that was quite sad. I did an enormous amount of work in that case.
Yeah, and you were even able to tell how long the bodies had been there for. How did you do that?
Yes, they couldn't. The police couldn't tell where Huntley had got into the ditch. They didn't know it was Huntley at that time, of course. And I was able to show them where it was because, although they didn't realise it, the plants that had been trodden down had grown back up in a very specific way. And I showed them the pathway, and when I did show them the pathway, I found Jessica's hair on a twig, which showed that, you know, she'd probably been put over Huntley's shoulder and carried into the ditch. And then they said, well, you've shown us the way in, but how long ago? And by simply looking at the growth of the side shoots of the plants, because they had developed, because the tips had been damaged, and all the hormones from the tips that had been controlling the back of the plant, if you like, had stopped, and the little side shoots were allowed to develop. And so they had their own tips. And by counting the number of points where the leaves come off, and I came away and I did some experiments, and I know from my, I keep stinging nettles in the garden for butterflies anyway, I had a pretty good idea of how long it was, and I said it's about 2 weeks. And the experiments that we did showed it was about 2 weeks. And indeed, it was 2 weeks. And what was dramatic was that the entomology, looking at the flies and the maggots, got it completely wrong. They only said 4 days. But they had been in that ditch for 2 weeks.
My word. The as you've said, it's mostly very serious crimes that you've consulted on. Do many of them or any of them stay with you and kind of haunt you a little?
Well, they're bound to, aren't they, really, unless you're a completely unfeeling person. I mean, there are some that really stick in my mind. I can't get rid of. I just can't get rid of several. Usually when the victim looks asleep, if they just look as though they're asleep, then that's horrible. If they are decayed or if they're in an advanced state of decomposition or whatever, it doesn't seem to affect me so much because they don't look like people.
Mm.
But when you get a young girl who looks like Sleeping Beauty or a baby who looks, you could just put a shawl around it and it's in its cot, I mean, those cases do affect me quite badly. But you just have to subjugate those feelings and you just have to get on.
Yes, indeed. Afterwards, though, do you have a process, if you like, for, you know, getting yourself, trying to get it out of your mind?
No, I don't. I think people make too much fuss about all this mental health business. I mean, that makes me sound very hard. But I think if you pull yourself together and see the world as it really is and say, I've got a job to do, I've got to get on with this, and don't have fits of the vapours, as my grandmother used to say. Just get on with it. I think you'll pull yourself together. I mean, obviously it affects you, yes. But so what? You've just got to get on with life, haven't you?
Yes. Does it make you, though, think that, because you're seeing the perpetrators, you're seeing human beings at their very worst. Does that affect your view of people?
Oh, I think so, yes. Well, you know, life is a whole spectrum. You've got male at one end, female at the other, and everything in between is a spectrum. You've got bad at one end, you've got good at the other end, and everything is in the spectrum. So not everybody is 100% good. Not everyone is 100% bad. But you do get the extremes, don't you?
Yes.
It's very difficult to put into. I'm not a psychiatrist. I mean, I wouldn't know. But I mean, obviously, some people have mental conditions that are biochemical. I mean, schizophrenia. Schizophrenics can't help the way they are because their brain chemistry is all wrong. It's very difficult to judge them. And it's the same with these paedophiles. What is going on in their brains? Goodness knows. The main thing is that we have to keep society safe.
Yes, indeed. And are you still working, Patricia? Do you have any upcoming cases?
Yes, I'm working on one at the moment. I'm not looking for work, but if it came along, I would do a job, especially if it was complicated. I like complicated things. I'm very happy to help. It seems an awful waste of skill otherwise.
Mm.
And I am doing quite a big job at the moment, coming to the end of it, thank goodness. And I'll then sit back and have a rest. But I'm quite happy to work if there's work there. But of course, I am of a great age now, I hate to say.
As they say. But keep working, Patricia. You're doing a fantastic job.
Well, thank you.
Patricia Wilshire is a forensic ecologist. Patricia, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your interview.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
American Log Homes and Cabins is assisting a developer in liquidating several of our kits that have deposits on them for only the balance owed. Most of these will save you more than half of the original cost. An example, our Augusta model, normally $42,450, is being sold for $16,500. Our Biloxi model, normally $36,825, is being sold for $14,500. This includes delivery, excluding California, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, Idaho, Alaska, and Hawaii, but we will pay partial shipping to those states. These kits have not been manufactured, and there's no time limit on delivery. This is a log home kit that includes complete blueprints from foundation details to roof, stack sheets, and a construction manual. Any do-it-yourselfer or builder can erect the logs. Kits do not include any part or roof, windows, or doors. Please call 704-602-3035 for availability. You can also visit our website at www.americanloghomesandcabins.com.